I am Reese Tisdale, and this is the Future of Water, Blue Fields podcast, in which we talk about all the ways which companies, utilities, and people are addressing the challenges and opportunities in water. Today, it's going to be all about household water management. We're going to be joined by Bluefield analyst Nina Rossiter and Amber Walsh. Certainly, they're approaching the domestic water usage, not only in the U.S., but also globally, from a couple different angles. Amber's understanding of the basic layout of how water is used in the average household, and Nina's primary focus on digital application solutions and companies across the competitive landscape, essentially making a household smarter, provides different perspectives on what the market looks like today for domestic and household water applications, but also what it looks like going forward with the entry of new technologies and solutions and also partnerships that we're seeing across the landscape. This topic and discussion stem largely from a report recently released by Bluefield in January in 2022, so earlier this month, Domestic Water Drivers and Emerging Trends for Advanced Water Management in the Home. We look at a couple different countries and what are the key trends, opportunities, and players in those markets. So with that being said, let's get into the conversation with Nina and Amber. This is going to be a good one. All right. I'm joined by Bluefield analyst Nina Rossiter and Amber Walsh. So just for a couple of introductions, I know Nina has been on the Future Water podcast before, but Nina, for those not in the know, you seem to be a bit of a nomad. So admittedly, I have no idea when I asked this question. Where are you today? And I guess, where are you heading?
So 2 days ago, I actually flew to Orlando. And that's actually where another coworker of ours, Eric, he used to live there. And recently he moved to Chicago. So he had some recommendations for me. And Orlando is more than just theme parks, I've learned. It's actually got a lot to do. And I'm excited to explore during the weekends, check out, you know, the Blue Springs and whatnot. So excited to be here.
How long are you going to be there for?
Here for a month and then have to figure out what to do after that. TBC.
This is it's a new world. And I think you embody the remote work and or homeless experience.
A bit of both.
Exactly. So Amber, this is definitely your first time on the podcast, but I know you're in Boston or actually Hopkinton. Which for those not in the know is a starting point of the Boston Marathon to give you a reference. But how are things with you and welcome to the Future of Water?
Good. I'm excited for this.
So, and Amber, you play a big part in this. The topic of home water management came about in recent months. And essentially, there's been a convergence, for lack of a better way to put it, of requests and interest from clients about household water management. These companies like digital water firms or vendors, technology companies, big tech is another way to put it in my mind, and also consumer products companies that are actually in the household, and they're trying to figure out how does water, not only they understand how water gets into the home, they have some idea of how it sort of flows through the home, where it goes. But there are all these different factors. Technology is playing a big role. Also, the role of climate and other factors are shaping how we think about water management. And, you know, household water management has traditionally been overlooked, maybe, and partly because of its share of the pie. Obviously, you know, industry and agriculture, as we know, takes up or uses and consumes a significant amount of water. A household, on the other hand, less so. But that doesn't mean it's not an opportunity, because shaped by all these different externalities and stakeholders. So let's just start from the top, Amber, and let's kick it off with you. Can you help us define what is domestic water and how we should think about it?
Yeah, definitely. So domestic water, that's going to be the water used both inside and outside your home. We're talking about indoor water use. We're talking about what water is used in the bathroom, the kitchen, and to wash your clothes. Outside, we're talking about lawn irrigation and water used to wash your car. And Although in the US, this is about like 8% of total withdrawals. Globally, it's closer to 12%. So like Reese, you were saying, it is a small share of the pie, but it is important to think about. There's a lot of diverse stakeholders, and I think it's a super interesting space. When we think about domestic water, we can think about its relation to the population. So areas of high growth, we might see increases in their domestic water demand.
And I think, you know, I think the other thing we definitely think about in the U.S., the U.S. is a big market, but in some recent analysis you did, you looked at the U.S., you also looked at Australia and the U.K. specifically. Those were the benchmark countries to get an idea of all these different factors shaping it. And but in the U.S., I mean, as we know, there are now conservation targets once again being implemented in places like California that, you know, will influence that. And we've already seen, you know, in places like Arizona, you're not allowed to have, or you're discouraged from having grass, at least in your front lawn. I remember at one point when I lived in Phoenix, people were actually painting their front lawns green, you know, like the dirt, and it kind of crazy what people imagine of the front yard. Green has something to do with happiness in the home. I have no idea. So, but when we think about all these players, I mentioned California, but maybe you could give us a broader idea of why should the homeowner individually care? And maybe we can talk a little bit about the stakeholders as well beyond that in a minute, but why should the homeowner care about its own water usage other than just paying the water bill?
Definitely. So first, about paying their water bill, they might care because it's going to cost them more money as time goes on. We see here in the U.S., water bills are on the rise. So, and that's a trend seen in other places as well. In Australia, we saw increases not as significant as in the U.S., but the bills are on the rise. So you're using more water, you're definitely going to be paying more. So you might care about that. There's also policies, like you mentioned, mandates to reduce water usage in your household in times of drought. There's also incentives. So you could get a rebate to get a more water-friendly fixture in your home. So you could get money back and improve your home. Also, if you care about the climate or the environment, as water scarcity becomes more prevalent and you want to reduce water in your home, you're helping out others. And we've seen that. So like we have storms, floods, droughts, they've been really costly. So if we could reduce drought, that would be great.
And then I guess just on the basic level, if someone else in our neighborhood is conserving water or not watering their lawn, then of course, peer pressure plays a role in that, especially in water scarce environments, to not be the only person in your neighborhood turning on the sprinklers and not thinking about your water consumption.
So do you look enviously at those that have a brown lawn where all the plants are dying because they're using less water?
I might have to start doing that, but I think it really is, you know, following what's going on in the news and what's in your neighborhood or local environment and what is the right action to take for your home. That's really important these days.
Yeah. And I think back to Amber, your point about increasing bills, right? I mean, water bills can only increase so much, but I think we look at them, do the sort of a benchmarking exercise every year. It's usually around midsummer in which we do this, but I think the average water bill in the U.S. is $80 to $100. I don't have the exact number right at my fingertips, but I think that would be a monthly bill. So then but that is bifurcated really between water and wastewater. And we do have control of really the water usage. We have less control of the wastewater, right? It's sort of passing through the system, but that's more than half of your utility, water-related utility bill. And I think that's where a number of different players see not only a longer-term opportunity for on-site water reuse, treatment and reuse, or other applications. So therefore, if you reduce your water usage and consumption within the house, your wastewater bill ideally will go down at the same time. So it's kind of a bit of a twofer if you will, when it comes to efficiencies and advantages. So real quickly, I mean, I think we're all at home or a home right now. So where is the water being used?
Yeah, so like we mentioned earlier, indoors, a large portion of your water use happens in the bathroom. So in the US, toilets account for about 24% of indoor water use. You have your sinks, showers, baths. When we go to the kitchen, we have a sink, we have our dishwasher. When we clean our clothes, we have our washing machine. And a big portion of water use actually goes to leaks. So identifying those leaks and fixing them could even decrease that water bill. And then outdoors, like mentioned earlier, watering your lawn to make it that nice green color and to wash your car uses up a lot of water.
Yeah, I mean, I think the number that you said about 50% or half the water is in the bathrooms, and then 30% is outside the home. So for irrigation, I would imagine that's where a lot of the leakage happens. But I think, quite honestly, I don't think a lot of homeowners know if there are leaks in the household, right? You could just have a slow leak. I mean, just your stopper in your toilet could just be running and you're losing gallons and gallons. And look, if the price of water is so low or it can only increase so much, then you may not think that much of it. Now, it depends on the demographics, how much you care, but this is where there's this sort of interesting play. And this is where I'd like to get you more involved in the conversation, Nina, is really the role of technology. And this is something you've been looking at, not only at the interface, so like the meters between the utility and the house, but also increasingly what's happening in the home. Because I think when I think about, you raised it, peer pressure, you know, what are your neighbors doing? And admittedly, I get a report every month, and I've said this on this podcast, as well as Dave McGimsey's Water Values podcast, that I get a monthly report telling me how my energy usage from my thermostat varies compared to people in my neighborhood or my zip code, right? It tells me, hey, you're higher, lower. There's a little bit of that. And that's what sort of a cloud-based data platform enables homes to do. And it, certainly it works for certain demographics. But hey, if that's a starting point, then fine, you got to start somewhere. It's not like everybody in the world is going to start deploying digital solutions in the home for water management. So I don't ramble on, Nina, why don't you give us a little heads up on what is happening with digital and how it's impacting home water management?
Sure. So I guess digitalization, it is really changing the domestic water market. And like you said, it's a lot to do and made possible with data, or more specifically, data analysis, since it does allow the utility and not only the home, of course, be more energy efficient, manage leaks, it improves our customer engagement. And when we think about the opportunities for monitoring or to have those improvements, the easiest way or one of the top of mind ways is just water quality monitoring. For example, there's a US startup and it's called Spout or Safe Spout, and they've been targeting leak detection for in-home drinking water. So basically they just combine the hardware and the software. There is a small disposable cartridge and you fill that with your tap water and then you insert it into a reader. And with your smartphone app, you're able to actually see real-time results. So that's like a quick way that people can use digital to figure out their water quality in their home. But in the domestic market, there are several players that do work with utilities, and I can go into that further. But I know that Amber has worked a lot with understanding on-site reuse, and that is a role that has been improving water in the home.
Yeah, so I would say, you know, when it comes to things like Google Home and Alexa, is that an opportunity for information or information sharing?
Yes, it is. And Amazon, they've released Sidewalk, which is something that's pretty interesting. It's a mesh network. And what it does is it connects with all our devices that are connected to Amazon. It creates this Wi-Fi basically capability. So a way that it could be used in water is with metering, because nowadays instead of just manual meters and getting the meter readers to go to your homes every month to check for your water consumption, we are shifting to AMR, or maybe more specifically AMI, for large utilities. And that really reduces the workforce, but it also allows for more data analysis for water consumption. And having these sidewalk devices out there means that we can connect the data from the meter straight to the utility, and that allows the utility to analyze the data. And of course, we are seeing other players expand into this sort of hardware data move, whether it's via M&A or internal R&D. And so, for example, it's like Badger Meter. They are expanding beyond just their typical meter capabilities, and they're buying water quality players. So that allows them to go further upstream and see, you know, get access into the distribution side of the network.
So, all right, that's helpful. So, all right, so there's this hardware software players in it. And this sort of now back to you, Amber, which I think is where Nina was going. And who are the stakeholders who would be interested in this? I mean, we've talked about the homeowner, but are there, how could these vendors get into the home, you know, through partnerships, or what are some paths to do so?
Yeah, definitely. So one that we see actually a lot, insurance companies. So we mentioned the smart leak detection systems like Flow by Moen and Flume. So you can, they have these systems that they'll detect if you have a leak, how much water you're using. The key thing insurance companies are looking at here is the leak prevention. So if your homeowner can detect the leak and get it fixed ASAP, then you're not going to have that costly claim that's going to cost the insurance company a ton of money. So that's a key stakeholder that we see. Another group is just the appliance manufacturers. They're getting into these partnerships with the smart home players. So you'll see Kohler partnered with Finn, Flow by Moen. So Moen partnered with Flow. So they're trying to kind of move with this market and digitalize.
What's interesting, I think, and we talked about this, I believe it was earlier in the week, which why it dawned on me, but I think you mentioned appliance manufacturers. You also mentioned the insurance companies, and that makes perfect sense. There are so much data and information that they could potentially capture. I mean, we talked a little bit about water quality, so there can be ongoing water quality sensors testing that. And that's obviously the topic du jour, at least in the US, if not the rest of the world, with things like lead and PFAS. So I think there's this concerted focus or converging focus, not only just on basic infrastructure and climate, but also on water quality. But I guess my point is insurance companies and appliance manufacturers or vendors, they don't necessarily know who their end users are, right? I mean, that's something that came up. So I don't, Nina, you may have, I think you were the one who may have brought it up, or it was someone else.
Exactly. So that is a market channel that is becoming pretty aggressive, the relationship between smart home appliance manufacturers and insurance companies. And like you said, it is a huge focus on leak detection. And that's really because in the home, what we found is that in both Australia and the US, around 30% of domestic property claims is from water damage. So of course, that means that insurance companies, they're on the hook. They don't want to pay that much. So they need to make some changes. And one way they do this is really having the homeowners to install these smart home leak detection devices, because then the homeowner, they're notified of the leaks right away, they fix it, and that reduces the insurance payouts for water damage. And of course, with policies, it's these applications for smart home appliance manufacturers, they have these applications and they're connected to the policyholders, because often insurance companies, they don't even have an email address for these policyholders, since we get them from maybe local insurance agents. So that kind of allows insurance companies to really get an idea of who their end users are.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And that's not unique to the water sector. You know, depending on your business model, if you go through, if you have a distribution or distributor network, you know, those distributors are not telling the primary, who are their customers? Because they obviously don't want the, in the case of the insurance companies, the agents don't want the larger insurance company, Chubb, for instance, doing an end around and going straight to the customer and making offering discounts and maybe even going direct. That's always a concern. But it's also similar for the hardware and equipment, right? So when you install a Bosch dishwasher in your household, right? So you install it, or an LG, whomever the manufacturer is, that company doesn't necessarily know, because typically you go to an appliance vendor, whether it be, showing my age, it could have been Sears back in the day or Best Buy or whomever. So this gives them more insights and information into that household and exactly what is happening. Now, there's also, even if there is data collected in real time, which is kind of where the future is going potentially, is if the home gets smarter, and it doesn't have to be everybody, it just has to be a good sample size of insights. And then consumer products companies are interested, right? I mean, because there's not only tying into the, it's not just appliances. I mean, you have to have detergent, there's soap, there's toothpaste, there's laundry detergent, there's other cleaners, there's all sorts of things that go into the household that could benefit from this quote unquote data. I don't know if Amber, you had any thoughts on that.
Yeah, just when we're talking about kind of detergents, it just brought up a cool point about reuse. So there's another aspect of it where there's some really cool solutions going on, but there's also an increasing emphasis on home reuse. So if we're trying to reuse gray water, so that's going to be water coming from like your washing machines, it's going to be, I would think down the line, that detergent companies are going to start looking at, okay, what can I make that's going to clean the clothes, but then also be easier to go through the gray water reuse system and be reused in the home?
I think that's a really good point. Now let's get into a major challenge for this, right? So in the markets we've looked at, the UK, the US, Australia, housing stock, it's pretty well established. There's plenty of it, but there is new build happening. So I think, Amber, you had raised one of these points about what's the best way or easiest way to get into this market. So I'll leave it at that and let you pick that up.
Yeah, definitely. So new builds, I think that's going to be the key to having more of these gray water reuse systems in the home. If you're looking at just an existing home, you're going to have to redo some plumbing. And it also requires that homeowner to take initiative to install the gray use or to like get the plumbers out, get the whole system going. And that doesn't really happen that often, even with incentives like rebates. So I think if you just have it in a new home, it gets the product sold and we get an increase in reuse without wait. I feel like the market, if we go through existing homes, is just going to be much slower than putting it in new builds.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like anything else, greenfield development is always the best time to capture sort of economies, design. And I think to that point, I think they, in some of the analysis we've done, there are property developers, large property developers, you know, developing tracts of homes, and they're incorporating smarter water fixtures, and or appliances and monitoring into the house from the outset. To think about doing it in my home doesn't seem all that exciting or capital efficient, quite honestly, I'm not going to lie. That is a challenge in and of itself. And then I think ultimately, you know, Eric Bendler and I have talked about this in some detail about what is the role of the utility in this discussion, you know, and I don't say that we've butted heads is not exactly right, but the question is this a threat to the utilities? Is it an opportunity to the utilities? Because really the utility kind of stops at the door, right? I mean, that's really what they care about. So when your house floods, it's not on your water utility, but what they want to know is that meter data. So look, I think this is a really interesting report. We've had several really interesting discussions with clients about this report that we put out. I know a lot of work went into it. It's really interesting. And it brings together a lot of key trends and factors we're looking at. One, you know, there's the climate issue, whether it be in Australia, the US, and to some extent in the UK as well. Secondarily, but not of any less importance, it's the digital or technology applications that we're seeing in the home. And I think when you bring the, and then I say thirdly, you know, a number of different stakeholders that I don't want to say have overlooked. I think technology has enabled a whole new group of stakeholders to participate in this, right? And so rather than you could easily say, oh, this is never going to happen, the market's too fragmented. But if you narrow the scope and say, okay, there's slices of the pie where there's going to be really active participation in this and adoption, then I think that's where it all starts. And I think the analogy I've used with others is that there was one point where mobile telephony in Africa was really a small slice of the global pie for mobile telephony, but ultimately it became huge. It became a leapfrog technology that eliminated sort of landline infrastructure in many respects and connected a lot of people. So while it maybe seemed to be a small slice of pie, the growth could be immense. And a certain slice of homeowners, and you could throw me in that bucket, it's a lot easier to sell me something than it is maybe the agriculture sector, right? You know, there's a point source problem that can be identified, whereas in agriculture, it's definitely more diffuse in sort of putting your finger on the problem. So with that being said, let's sort of wrap this up. And this is what I typically do with anybody who's on this. And I'll start with you, Nina. What are you working on now going forward? And what can we look for?
Sure thing. So I guess starting the new year, we have been doing, or I guess late last year, we did a lot of research and we're continuing to do a lot of research on the metering landscape. Just seeing the moving parts and who are the new stakeholders that are coming in or the market entrants. So because of that, we'll be creating a market insight at some point, probably early Q2, I imagine. And that's really a lot of my focus currently.
No, that sounds great. That'll be really interesting because I know we've been looking in that and there's good data coming out and conversations coming out of that. So Amber, what's on your plate?
Yeah, so I'm looking at corporate sustainability. So we just had a food and bev corporate sustainability report come out, a little plug. But then now next we'll look at semiconductors and down the line, potentially data centers. So just what are companies doing to reduce their water use? What technologies are coming up in that space? And then also a little down the line, a cost of water report. So just comparing, what is different water supplies cost?
Yeah, that'll be really interesting. There's been a fair amount of back and forth on that one. And the data centers, I thought of you this morning because I was my friend Guy Zeebe, who does, I think, telecom. He has a telecom market research firm focused on Africa. He just put something out on data centers in Africa. And literally I have it because I printed. I woke up this morning, turn on my phone and saw that Guy had just published something on it. So I thought that was really interesting and aligns with that sector. We've looked at data centers in the past, kind of gets back to the technology and sort of a changing landscape for water demand. And that's one area that's been of interest. So, all right, guys. Well, look, thanks a million for, in a pretty quick turnaround, I kind of threw this on your laps to say, hey, this is pretty interesting. I know you guys have been working on this. So thanks for participating. And I look forward to the next conversation, whether it just be on Zoom later today or on the podcast. So thanks a million for taking part.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Talk soon. All right. That's a wrap. It's still January, so I'm obligated to wish everyone a happy new year and 2022 still. You only got a couple days left. But before we sign off, please subscribe to the Future of Water podcast give us a review. You can do that on Apple, or you can just download and subscribe on all the other podcast platforms. If you have any interesting topics you'd like us to discuss, you can contact us at waterexperts@bluefieldresearch.com. And lastly, tell a friend about it. Pass it off to colleagues. Make sure other people are getting some, what I think are interesting tidbits about what's happening in the water sector. It's always evolving and a good thing to listen to as you're doing the dishes. This podcast and these water industry insights have been brought to you by the one and only Bluefield Research. To learn more about us, visit us at bluefieldresearch.com. Talk soon. Be safe. Be well.